We'll talk about what we're going to do.
Bob.
Why could there be no argument today about whether you paid to be or not, irrespective of what you're if you're paying yourself £1 million dividend and £7 grand in salary, I'm saying that's wrong.
What I'm saying is that if it's set up in a way that makes it feel like Manford and PA, and that it's set for the future, and it just feels and looks artificial to life, then they're saying we're going to treat the whole thing as earnings. Now, if on the other hand, you don't say, and every month we'll pay ourselves a dividend, we'll simply pay ourselves a salary, and then if we got some money left over at the end of the year, we'll pay a dividend. Then I have no difficulty with that at all, because that's what a dividend truly is, isn't it? It's kind of a... I know. Thanks very much.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll send them up to you.
Very welcome.
Thank
you.
Good to see you.
Can I take your microphone?
Yeah, I've just put it on the table over. Thanks for all your help. Yeah. I like voting for quarter and then draw that. Yeah. But if you say every month we will take X salary and X dividends, then that's the bit I think.
Sorry to interrupt. It's on your back.
No, that's fine.
Cool.
Right, it's not working now.
I don't have to turn anything on. Control by you. Totally in your hands.
No, they're so genuinely.
I was going to do a little bit of a session. I mean, literally just 3 or 4 minutes on Zara and who we are and why we are. That would fit in with what you're doing.
Absolutely. I mean, we actually have got ourselves a good, a really good profile.
Your stand is different.
Yeah.
I could maybe make reference to. Hi, Chris. I'm Luke. Are you? Must have walked right past.
You did.
Because, sorry. No, I wasn't. I didn't get here till after dinner. So now it's definitely. Jeremy. I've spoken.
I must admit, you're from somewhere else. I'm on the council now.
Good.
I'm saving it like that. Yeah. I'm actually doing it there. Yeah.
Good.
Because he's good speaker. I'm on the sort of stuff. So,
good.
More questions.
Good.
All right.
Thank you. Okay then. Fine. I'll go and sit somewhere over by the front there. Is Henry's over there? You're Henry, I'm told.
Oh,
I'm yeah, David. Yes.
Hi. Oh, nice to meet you. Hi.
Hi. Can I sit anywhere? Or?
I think so, yeah.
Hi, I'm David Evans. Hi.
So you're all set everything ready to go, are you?
Yes, I'm wired for sound.
Okay, I'll...
Oh, no, please. Well, as long as you want. What time are we expecting to finish this about? By 11, is it?
start. I've just got to do an introduction and a welcome to Bill Evans, and you're due on at 9:55. Because it's 9:55 till 10:57, basically.
Right.
Would you do a quick run out about
it? That's fine. I might do. I certainly wanted a bit of table discussion, so I'll organise that. And if I finish early, we'll do a bit of Q&A.
Sure,
okay.
Fine,
I'm told we've got some raving mics.
Raving microphones at the back, so I'll remind them to wait for those.
Oh, right. No, I came late last night, but I'm afraid I couldn't get here in time for the dinner.
So okay.
I got here about halfway through the dinner, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I ate in solitude.
Wow. Sometimes better that way, isn't it?
It looked as if it went well. I popped up to meet Alison your AV guy, Colin, who's very good afterwards. And everything seemed very positive last night, reading all the body language.
Yeah, it's a great bunch, I think, the AV team.
Sense that just walking in at the end.
They're amazing bunch. A lot of the faces you see at these things, you see them everywhere. You know, we're involved in the branch network as well as committee members. You know, the same happens at the training days. You know, they're up to almost partying till the early hours, and then they're up at cracking on the next morning working again.
I hear there was a group partying last night.
There usually is. Yeah, I mean, it's not unusual to finish on about 3 a.m. Then they're up again.
Been about half 10-ish, I do want. Everybody's in their seats, or nearly everybody.
Well, good morning again. Good morning again. It's all gone lovely and quiet. Fantastic. For those of you that have just joined us, welcome again. Can I just have a quick show of hands for those of you where today is your first day? Well, not many. Crikey. So all the rest of you were here yesterday, then I take it. Well, I just want to welcome you all officially again to the second day of the Members' Weekend, and just particularly welcome members who are just attending the Saturday. For those of you that weren't here yesterday, and that's not many of you, obviously, just to introduce myself, I'm Henry Cooper. I'm the new AAT president. And just to confirm, I'm no relation to Henry Cooper the boxer or to Tommy Cooper or Gary Cooper the cowboy. For those of you that were here last time, you'd have heard all that anyway, so please feel free not to laugh. I hope you all enjoyed yesterday. I know I had a great time yesterday. It was a bit of a short weekender for me, but CPD-wise, because we had to go to the council session in the afternoon, but I know the session I went to after that was really good, and all the feedback I've had from other delegates so far has been really good. So I hope you're all enjoying. Hope you all enjoyed yesterday, and hope we all get as much out of today as well. And I hear there were some quite late nights for some of you. Sort of gone 10:30 from what I can gather last time, which is really, and so I'm quite impressed that you're all here this early in the morning as well. So again, congratulations, welcome. Okay, moving on then. This is the main session of the day of the morning. So I just want to thank Mazars for those of you who weren't here yesterday. Mazars are our gold sponsors for the Members' Weekender, and I'm very pleased to introduce the keynote speaker in a moment. Just before I do that, just to let you know that on the Mazars stand, they've got a place where you can drop your business card off, and there's a drawer there for a magnum of champagne, I believe. Okay, on to the main speaker then, David Evans. David has been a UK senior partner of Mazars for almost 10 years, having been re-elected for a third term of office in December 2009. And he plans to stand down from his position later this year. Within Mazars globally, David's responsibilities have included being a member of the Group Executive Board and being an international sponsor of HR. In his client-facing roles, David has acted as lead and advisory partner to many rapidly growing entrepreneurial businesses. David is also an experienced corporate finance practitioner to SMEs and to mid-market companies. Without any further ado then, I'll hand over to David. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Henry. Good morning, everyone. Morning. That wasn't bad, actually. I thought normally when you come to a group of people you don't know and the first thing you hear is, well, actually, half of you guys are up till 3 a.m. You expect to have to go through the first 10 minutes waking everybody up. But that wasn't bad at all. Let's just try it one more time. Morning, everyone.
Morning.
Great. Because what I'd really like is for this session to be a bit more interactive. It's much more fun for me, and I hope it's much more fun for you. Now, what we have, or this is the subject that I've been asked to talk to you about, and what I'd like to do for the next hour or so is share with you some thoughts about what we can do together in the different constituencies that we represent here today to drive the UK economy forward, to help the SME community power the UK economy out of recession. Sounds like a big task. Do you know, I think there's lots of things that each one of us can do. Now, I don't know what your perspective on the economy is right now, but we're used to seeing cartoons like this. That's probably my favourite, actually. Or like this. The fact you're not laughing means you find that there is a deadly serious side to it. Or like this. The next slide is a bit more serious because I get sent probably every week the one-page summaries by the lead economists of 3 or 4 of our mainstream banks. And all I did the week I was preparing these slides, I don't know, 2 or 3, 3 or 4 weeks ago, all I did was just go through and copy out some of the headlines that I read on what the bank economists were saying. Now, I'm not going to read them all out to you, because all it's meant to do is give you a flavour, and you can see those on the slides that you've got. But Britain enters a second recession, the longest downturn in a century. 2011, the year it all went wrong. The euro area, stuck in the doldrums. A bit of optimism when the bank economists start talking about the Far East. You don't often hear bank economists using words like China rocks. I thought that was so quotable, I just had to write it down. So that's where we are right now. What can we do to start to drive change? Well, in my view, the community that is most likely to drive change, the community that is best placed to deliver that change, is the SME community. And I've got some statistics here. I'm not going to spend lots of time on them, but just to give you the footprint of the SME community in the UK. These figures are drawn from a report that was produced for the government in 2011. So let me just show you the footprint that SMEs have. 97% of UK business, almost 50% of UK employment, almost 50% of UK turnover. SMEs growing disproportionately, according to all the employment statistics. Almost 50% of SMEs are planning moderate growth. These are new statistics prepared in the last few months. Over 25% of SMEs are planning increased capitalisation. So, what do you get? You get a community of business that has the financial muscle to drive change, and you have the green shoots of optimism. Just the green shoots. But I think it goes beyond that, because I think they have also the SME community, they have also the credentials to drive change. I've worked with lots of companies over the period of my career, from the very largest global brands through all the different sizes of mid-market and SME companies, right down to the very smallest SMEs employing one or two people. There are a few characteristics, in my view, that SMEs uniquely have in common. Not all of them, but the best ones. They're more agile. They're better connected with the market. They're more passionate. I use this word passionate on quite a number of my slides because it's so important in terms of building rapport and relationships with the customer population, with your clients if you're in practice, with the marketplace that you operate in. Passion for who you are, what you do, why you do it better than anyone else, why you're going to turn the world upside down. All that stuff is so important. SMEs tend to be more motivated. And if you put all those things together and strip out the fact that on the whole they don't have all the layers of management and bureaucracy that their much larger brethren have to battle through, here we have a real catalyst for innovation. So, some signs of optimism. But we need a groundswell of change. There are some SMEs that are doing things really well, and I'm going to show you some examples in a few moments. But to really increase the visibility of SMEs, to really start to make an impact on the UK economy and move it forward beyond the recession that we're in, we need that groundswell to grow from just a few to the majority. And if the businesses that we're talking about, the businesses that we're representing from the constituencies that have come here, the businesses that we run, the businesses that we advise, if we're to get different results, if we're to get different outputs, then we need to have different inputs. Otherwise, we carry on doing the same thing and expecting different results. Definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. I've done it all my life. Never works. And if we want to see change in the marketplace, then we have to input different behaviours, different drivers to get the different outputs. There's a number of factors that are external, and I'm not going to talk about those this morning. They would drive change, but they're not areas that we, sitting here in this room this morning, can so easily influence. If there was a greater capital base, if capital was more readily available, if beyond capital, bank finance was more readily available, undoubtedly that would help the SME community to grow and develop, undoubtedly. But we can't change that overnight. Undoubtedly, if the marketplace, the customer base showed more confidence, undoubtedly that would help to drive change through the SME community. But we can't change that overnight. This is all chicken and egg. And what we're looking at today are the steps that we can take to have our inputs into this problem from 10 miles further back. What can we do? What are the internal issues that we can deal with that over time will influence the external factors? So today, I want to look at the internal factors, what we can do. And I'd like to share with you my solution, my conclusions on some of the things that we, as a community of people, advising clients, running businesses, mainly within this SME sector, what we can do to drive change. I've called it a 5-point plan. But do you know, it would be really easy if I stood here and told you what I think the 5-point plan is. I'm not going to do that. What I'd like to do is share with you a couple of videos first. The videos that we in Mazar took, we have a magazine called Insight Out, and it's part of the way in which we seek to deepen our conversations with our clients and with the wider marketplace. I guess it's easy for each of you to subscribe to it if you wanted to. I'm sure if you went to our desk out there, they'd be able to help you do that. It's freely available to anyone. And we shot these two videos, or three videos actually. I'm not sure whether we'll have time for all three. I'll make a judgment call when we've done two. I've got three of them set up. And it's that they're clients of ours who operate at different levels in the SME space. And they're businesses that are changing the marketplaces that they operate within. And we just go along and we interview the leaders and we ask what they're doing. We try to form judgments to share with our other clients, to share with the wider marketplace, to share with you. So I'm just going to show you two videos without any comment. If we've got time, we'll do the third. These are companies that are doing things differently. And if we had time, and we don't, to analyse their financial results, what you would find is that each of these businesses is utterly bucking the trend. At a time when the marketplace is in recession and decline and income levels are flat or declining, these are businesses that are growing quickly. So I'm going to show you the videos. They're each about three or four minutes, something like that. And what I'd like to do after these videos is ask you to just share your thoughts around your tables, just for 5 or 6 minutes. What are the lessons that we learn from these videos? What are these businesses doing differently to buck the trend? Why are they different to some of the businesses that we see in the course of our daily lives? And what are the lessons we can learn, take away from today, and take back to our day jobs on Monday to better influence the market, the world that we operate within? So, 2 or 3 videos.
Achieved a 63% increase in export sales over the past 3 years adding 14 million to its turnover. We have seen some of the complexities of production this morning. Dick, is Ormerian a complex engineer?
Well, certainly the production process can be complex, and it isn't just science. I think there's a lot of alchemy involved, some black magic along the way. You're starting with a natural product, clay, which shrinks when you put it through the kilns and you heat it to 1,050 degrees centigrade. And we put it through the kilns three times. The second major stream of complexity within the business is the design. And the third major complexity arises from the fact that we sell to 60 countries worldwide. We're using a range of direct sales and or distributors. We have to manage all those relationships. We have to design for individual markets, and we have to make sure that we get paid at the end of the day.
What have been the key factors in the recent surge in Portmerian's sales and profits?
There are three big legs to the way we run the company, three important factors, and they all add up to brand. The three factors I would put are design. We pay a lot of attention to design. It's actually critical to what we do. There is then the point of quality. We put 20,000 units a day out of this factory here. Everyone has our back stamp on it, and that back stamp is an absolute guarantee of quality. And the third leg is sales and marketing. We are worldwide. Where we sell to is 60 countries, and our sales force really is just that, a force. You add those three up and you get brand. And that brand, we have lifted sales in the last 2 years by 60% and profits by more than that.
You mentioned design. So tell us, how does the design process work?
Well, design is key to our business. We spend about 2% of our sales revenue on design every year. This is a Spode Christmas tree. That's a 1938 pattern. Last year, we took the 1938 pattern and we put a candy stripe handle on the mug. And we sold 20,000 of those units in North America. And similarly, here's Botanic Garden. This is very much the bedrock of Portmerian. It's a pattern which was established by Susan Williams Ellis in 1972 and is one of the biggest selling ceramic patterns in the world. By placing that border around the outside there, you can hang the whole pattern together, and every year you can change some of the decals in the centre there to make it even more collectible and more desirable.
What does the future hold for Portmerian Potteries?
Well, hopefully more of the same. 75% of our sales are exported abroad, and that's one of the reasons for choosing Mazars as our business partners, because they're international as well. And for the current financial year, the stock market is expecting £6 million of profit before tax from us, and what the stock market expects, one really has to try to deliver. So, going forward, more of the same. And if we can find some acquisitions along the way which fit in with what we want, then we will probably have a very hard look at them as well.
Dick Steele, Chairman of Portmerian, thank you very much for talking to us.
Hannah, thank you.
If there's a whiff in the air in this very beautiful neck of Cumbria's woods, it's a fragrant one. This is the Wax Lyrical Factory, one of the UK's largest home fragrancing companies. We've come along to talk to owner-manager Mike Armstead, the man who spotted the potential and profit to be made in candle-making when no one else did, and the one who knew at the outset that to pull this particular business back from ruin, rebranding was essential. Mike, tell us why you decided to put good money and a considerable chunk of your life into a company that was on the brink of going into administration.
Well, initially, I had refused the opportunity to buy what was then called Colony. It was a fortunate act of fate that my wife and I happened to be in the Lake District and came and had a look at Colony. My wife spent a small fortune in the gift shop here, and I wandered around the perimeter and decided this couldn't possibly be a business that could lose £5 million a year. The infrastructure, the buildings, looked too good for that. So I was looking for something to do at the time and decided it was worth a punt.
Did you draw up a development plan to turn this company around?
There wasn't a lot of time for a development plan. The business was about to go into administration on the 2nd of January 2007. We were now into November, with Christmas approaching rapidly. Decisions just had to be taken. And I went ahead and bought the company with very limited due diligence. I wasn't really sure what I'd got until I arrived on the 2nd of January 2007.
And that's when you met the staff force here, the whole sort of factory workforce?
Absolutely. The toughest moment of any acquisition is the day you stand up in front of 150 faces. They don't quite know why you're there. They may be a little bit concerned with your presence. It's quite a daunting process, those first 10 minutes in a new business.
Jane, tell me a little bit more about how you match the design of your Fired Earth products with Fired Earth's own products, for example.
We start off with an initial concept and buying in some of the paint tins.
Yes.
And looking at the colours that they use in their ranges currently.
They've got some lovely names, haven't they? Chai and lime, red tea, emperor red tea, green tea and bergamot. These are the ones that you chose, aren't they?
Yeah, these were based on tea fragrances because tea was very on trend at the time, so we wanted to use those.
Our first joint venture was with the Royal Horticultural Society. It was a new venture for Colony, and it was a new venture for me. I had never been involved in licensing brands before. Having had great success with that license, we then went on to search out others. Our next venture was very different indeed, and that was with Jelly Belly. The brand is one of the coolest in the world. It's in the top 10 cool brands. We were very keen to get hold of this brand. It was a vehicle to show how clever we were as fragrance manufacturers to match the highly fragranced beans with a cold throw fragrance. A fragrance that you smelt straight from the tin was a real challenge for our perfumers and for our technical staff here. And it has been a fantastic brand for us. We've sold many millions of pounds worth of goods on the back of that relationship. And it's a relationship that's been a win-win. Jelly Belly have benefited and enjoyed the relationship, and we've certainly benefited from that.
There's another smell in the air visiting this factory, and one that bears all the notes of a tale of a profitable business that employs a staff of 150 and produces over 10 million products each year to bring in a turnover exceeding £11.4 million. In short, it's the sweet scent of success. You have customers in Russia, Japan, throughout the Middle East and Europe. How have you reached these new markets, and how do you match market with brand?
The markets that we've broken into, I mean, if you take Russia, for example, that is a new market for us. But for 2012, I can tell you our budgets and forecasts for that market, for those markets, are very, very significant. The market is really just opening up in Russia. I was in Moscow just recently, and it was such a pleasure to see Muscovites discovering home fragrance. The market had not existed prior to our entry into the market. In that case, we had no idea what would sell. As it happens, the market ranges, our RHS Chelsea range and some Timeless ranges, are selling extremely well there. In Japan, they've really taken to our RHS range. They love the Lindley Library artwork, and that has become a real success in Japan. In the Middle East, it tends to be sweeter fragrances, the stronger fragrances that people go for. In some cases, we don't know what's going to be successful. Our partners and distributors don't know what's going to be successful, but trial and error, and the consumer decides.
And the market's still opening up.
Our markets are still opening up. We've just moved into Australia. I would love to break into North America and Canada. That's the big prize. Hugely competitive, very difficult to get into. We are in discussions. we keep our fingers crossed.
Mike Armstead, owner-manager of Wax Lyrical, thank you very much for talking with us.
You're more than welcome, thank you.
I think we'll miss the third one just to keep on time. What I'd like you to do is just take, 4 or 5 minutes maybe, just to talk within your tables. There's nothing formal, no report back or anything, but the idea of today is to think and to learn and to see what is available to us, what information is available to us from the experiences of other people. So just around your tables, what do you think those businesses are doing differently to some of the businesses that you see? Those are, in financial terms, spectacularly successful. We haven't got time to analyse their financial results. If we did have that time, you would be deeply impressed. So what is it that they're doing? That's just a very small insight. What are the sort of lessons that we can take from that? Just 3 or 4 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes maybe, and I'd like to tell you the lessons that I draw from that and from my other wider experiences in this particular marketplace of companies that really work. 4 or 5 minutes. hate to stop such animated conversation, but if you could draw your discussions to a close, please. I have to say, I'm used to talking more to Mazar-type audiences, and they're far less obedient than you lot are. First of all, particularly when we have international conferences, if you say it starts at 8:30, they all drift. Well, it depends on. There is a cultural thing depending on which country they come from. But I have to say, the only people in the room at 8:30 are the English-speaking ones. And if you ask them to stop talking about a discussion group, you have to ask them about five or six times. So. Fantastic. Well done. I don't know whether it's the AAT community or the British culture. Combination of both. I hope you found the videos interesting, and I hope you got some pointers. Obviously, in 3 or 4 minutes of video, there's only a limited amount that you can say. But these are spectacular companies. I don't know either of them particularly well. I've met Dick Steele, who's the chairman of Port Merion, a couple of times, and I had quite a lot of dialogue with him. Wax Lyrical, I've never met the people at all. I know nothing about them beyond what's on that video and a little bit of background information that I've had. There's one other company I haven't got a video on, but it's a very small company that I do know very much better. And they've been in business for 7 or 8 years. It's at the smaller end of the SME zone. They probably employ, I don't know, 6 or 8 people right now. But last year, they increased their turnover and their profit by 26% without doing anything dramatically different. And over 3 years, they've increased their export sales by 85%. And they've, in the last couple of weeks, just won the Queen's Award for Industry. Now, I asked them, so what is it that you do differently to really buck the trends? And there were three things that they said. Firstly, you have to drill into this a bit, actually. You have to push them to get to the core points. Firstly, they get the basics right. What they do well. Secondly, they build deep relationships. And thirdly, they seek new markets. And a lot of the growth of LMK, as indeed was the case with Port Merion and Wax Lyrical, has come from export sales. But I asked LMK to go and analyse how their domestic sales had grown relative to their export sales. I've just told you their export sales grew by 85% over 3 years. What they found was that their and this was a bit of a surprise to them as well. What they found was their domestic sales had grown by almost the same amount. And they hadn't been concentrating on that so much. What they'd done is get the basics right and build a relationship. So, a 5-point plan. These are the lessons that I draw from those videos, that I draw from engaging with the business community at large, but particularly, because frankly it's the one I find the most exciting, the SME business community. And also, as I draw on the experience of running our own business, Mazar, for 10 years now. 5 points. And the first one is this. Whoops, sorry, go back one. In a competitive world, be very competitive. Now, do you know, I almost didn't put this slide in. Because I thought, why would I go to Bristol and waste the time of 200 accountants telling them what they already know? Because this is simply about getting the basics right. It's common sense. But it's amazing how many businesses don't get the basics right. And it's so important, before we go on to talk about the more complicated stuff, and actually none of it's that complicated, but you have to pause and say, none of the rest works if you don't get this part right. The design and quality. The customer service. Just getting the basics right. I quoted to you a company that I know very well, LMK. Very small business. But they really, their financial performance is staggering. And mainly what they've done is get the basics right. They do good products, and they are pricing them very, very aggressively. They don't price crumble. We'll come on to that a little bit later on. The third point there is the only one I want to comment on in any detail, about this aligning brand values. I think we have to be clear about the messages that we send to the marketplace through our businesses, through the way in which we communicate, through our website, through our advertising, through our sales force, through the people that we use to engage with the paying public. On a Saturday morning, if I, at about this time, if I wasn't here talking to you, what I'd be doing is mountain biking. I try to do it every Saturday for a few hours. How many of you do mountain biking? Oh, a miserable lot. Do any of you keep fit? If you do mountain biking regularly, you get pretty muddy, or more significantly, so does your bike. And if you don't clean the bike, the moving parts very quickly get clogged up and they stop moving. Now, in a hose pipe ban, it's very difficult to get your bike clean. And I try to live my life bounded by the law. And so the last couple of weeks, I found it really difficult to hose my bike down and get it clean. And it started to clog up. So I decided to spend some money this last week and buy a power washer. They are more environmentally friendly, they use a lot less water, and they're legal. Well, some of them are legal. And so I know nothing about power washers, and it's not a very exciting topic. I did a tiny bit of research on the internet. And what caused me to buy the one that I bought this week? I've no idea whether it works, because I haven't tried it yet. But what caused me to buy the one that I bought was because all the messages that this company gave to the market were completely aligned. They understood their brand and they promoted a small number of brand values very clearly and very well. They came across as a bunch of geeks, frankly, who were passionate about power washers. And I thought, that's good enough for me. So, it's simple, isn't it? But if you don't get this slide right in the businesses that we run and the businesses that we advise, the rest of it becomes irrelevant. That's the first point. The second point is, in a changing world, adapt. The world that we operate within is changing very rapidly. It changes because of technology. It changes because our employees, our teams, have changing perspectives. It changes because the marketplace and our customers themselves have different expectations and are influenced in different ways. And my personal, very strong view, and this is based particularly on my experiences in running Mazar for 10 years, is that if you run a business today in the same way that you ran that business 5 years ago, you won't be in business in 5 years' time. I think the market is changing that fast. Now, one of the ways, one of the key ways that our businesses can be run in such a way that they adapt quickly, that they self-tune to the changing demands of a changing marketplace, is that we operate them with a can-do culture. And that starts with us. It starts at the top. We have to find new solutions, and the can-do mindset is infectious. Very quickly, your employees get it. Very quickly, your customers get it. But we have to be at the forefront of change. The world is changing, and we don't just have to change with it. We have to be at the leading edge of that change. I didn't do very well with my mountain biking analogy. Let me ask, how many of you watched the Spanish Grand Prix last week? Oh, slightly more. What the under duress. What do the rest of you do? Well, for those of you who didn't watch the Spanish Grand Prix, stay with me for a minute, please. Because the sporting world compresses into an hour or two some of the key lessons that we need to take on board in the business world. Williams is an iconic name in British motorsport. They haven't won a Grand Prix for 8 years until last weekend. And somehow they put a car together that was faster than anyone else's. And their driver, Pastor Maldonado, I have to say, drove a spectacular race. And they were running at the front. But because they were running at the front, they could drive the strategy. And so when it suited them to do the tyre change, they came in, and Ferrari, who were running second, had to cover them off. And their race was compromised because they weren't driving the change. And the commentators likened it to a race of two or three weeks previously, when Lotus were in a position to challenge for the lead and didn't, probably because they were insufficiently aggressive with the strategy, particularly the pit strategy that they deployed. The sporting world compresses into an hour or two lessons that we need to learn in the business world that take us years to learn. We have to be, the businesses that we advise, the businesses that we run, in a changing world, have to be absolutely at the forefront of change. And one of the things, one of the lessons that you see from those videos is that each of those companies, in its own space, was right there at the front. I don't know very much about Wax Lyrical, and I don't know very much about the marketplace that it trades in. But this idea of licensing brands, what was the one that there was the top Jelly Bellies? One of the top, was it the top 10 coolest brands? I have heard of it, so it probably is. That was really important to them, but it was groundbreaking and it was innovative. And we have to find the new solutions, the technological solutions, the business model, the value chain, the routes to market. We have to find the new ways that recognises the advances of technology and recognises the changing expectations of the customers that we serve. We have to find ways in that changing world not just to adapt, but to be at the forefront of how change is driven through that marketplace. And finally, in terms of change, there's this slippery science, I would call it, recessionary investment. How much do you invest in a recession? Investment is about people, it's about products, it's about brand, it's about advertising. It's about lots of things. Do you commit money when you haven't got very much? Or do you not? Conventional wisdom says you probably don't. Conventional wisdom makes you feel better. If I'm honest, I'm not convinced that conventional wisdom really drives a business forward. Of course, you have to be cautious. But if you follow conventional wisdom too closely, the competition, or the more aggressive parts of the competition, will steal a march on you, for sure. One of the lessons that we've learned in Mazar is that you have to keep on investing even through the recession. And if you go to any part of Mazar, one of the phrases that I've tried to use, particularly through the recession, is no investment, no growth. And you really understand... you really feel that you're making progress in a business when you start to hear your words coming back to you through other people's lips. Now they've got it. No investment, no growth. Last year we grew by 8% organically in a marketplace that on the whole was flat or contracting. We have lots of things that we could improve in our business. We're far from perfect, make no mistake. But I do believe that investment, cautious, prudent, planned, strategic investment, even through a time of recession, is really, really important. And I also believe that a key need for business leaders is to make sure that they're developing their brand. I don't know if you noticed, but that term brand kept popping up in those videos. It's precious. Invest in it. Look after it. Nurture it. Use it. Brands need, particularly through a recession, to deepen their conversation with their customers and to deepen their engagement with the marketplace. Now, that may be through advertising. And if we had time, I could quote to you how certain automotive companies, for example, have moved their position forward dramatically in a particular marketplace in a time of recession, because one group of auto manufacturers did continue to invest in the brand and really develop and deepen their conversations with their consumers, and others did not. And we could look at the statistics, particularly, say, in North America. There's a lot of statistics about that. Certain car manufacturers deeply invested, deepened their relationships, deepened their conversations, and their sales over the next few years, the strength of their brand, Mercedes would be a good example, grew exponentially. I think as we embark on those conversations, I think we also have to remember it's a changing world. And the demands, the expectations of our customer base is changing too. And the way that you influence customers is different now to the way that you influenced customers 5 years ago, probably 2 years ago. One of the things that most drives consumer spend right now in households is emotion. I'm not a marketing person. There's so much data out there. People are, of course, influenced by price and value and all that stuff, but ultimately they go much deeper than that into the realm of emotion. So it's a changing world, and the way that we engage with that changing world, the way that we run our businesses, also needs to change. Adapt, or we get left behind. Thirdly, in a challenging world, be a challenger. It is a challenging world. And one of the things that I most noted from those videos is that the businesses that were featured were real challengers. I've used slightly different terminology on the first bullet point. Smart movers don't farm, they hunt. Farmers stay at home and look after what they've got. That's good. You need people like that. But actually, those aren't the people who will change the world. The people who will change the world, the people who will drive businesses forward when other businesses are standing still, the people who will fuel the SME population to power forward and drive the UK economy out of recession, those aren't the farmers, those are the hunters. And the people who run Port Merion are hunters. Listen to the way that they language what they do. Dick Steele said, we have a sales force. It is a force. They are out there, in your face, in the market, driving sales. Similarly, Wax Lyrical, they're all over the world. They're trying to open up new markets. In a challenging world, we have to be challengers. We have to drive the change that we're bringing into our business. We have a saying in Mazar, my saying actually, we don't allow Olympic flames. I may have to change that terminology, because what it is meant to say is, I don't want people, Olympic flames never go out, or right up until this week. That's how I've always explained it to people. Olympic flames never go out. I don't want people in my business who never go out. Their job is to engage in the marketplace with the clients, with the wider marketplace, with potential clients. I don't want Olympic flames. As I say, I might need to think of a new analogy after the events of the last week. But in our businesses, the businesses that you represent, the businesses that you run, the businesses that you advise, what is needed are people who have a mindset to go out and change the world. And the people who are hunters, I'm afraid, in any discipline, are in much shorter supply than the people who are farmers. The next thing that I think we need in a challenging world to be a real challenger is razor-sharp focus. One of the things I most say in Mazar is I want people to do fewer things but at greater depth. I've heard so many strategy plans over the years that are too vague. Strategy plans that are too vague will drive business that's too vague. Business that's too vague doesn't get to the heart of the matter. What we need in our businesses to be real challenges in this challenging world is razor-sharp focus. Be absolutely clear what we're going to do. Absolutely clear what we're not going to do. That's part of strategy as well. Absolutely clear how we're going to do it. And when you've decided exactly what the strategy is with razor-sharp focus, make sure that the goals of the people in the business and the KPIs that are measured are absolutely aligned with the strategy that's based on razor-sharp focus. Do you know, it's so easy to stand here and say all this stuff. I've spent the last 10 years trying to live it, and it's so hard, isn't it? And as I look back over each year, I think there's so many things that we could have got slightly better. Yes, of course, there are areas that can be improved, but this is the goal that would really drive the SME community forward if a greater proportion of people could live it. Razor-sharp focus and the business aligned, the goals being utterly congruent with that. I do think to be a challenger in a challenging world, we have to be challenging two of our people. I do not subscribe to the workhouse principle that just wants more and more from the people that work for us. I do not want that. But what I do believe is that talented people want to work in a challenging environment. And I believe it is our duty as employers to give them that environment so that their careers, which they've entrusted with us, can be developed to reach the high point of their potential. So I believe we have to be challenging. I believe we have to seriously challenge mediocrity. But I believe that has to be done within a culture that is based on the one hand, high challenge, and on the other hand, on high support. I think the two must go hand in hand. I was speaking at an HR seminar in Milan about a year ago. I'm not an HR professional, obviously. And I shared a cab back to the airport with one of the other speakers who is, as far as I know, an HR professional. And he was giving me a little bit more detail on some of the stuff he'd been talking about in his presentation. And he was saying that three or four years ago, or immediately prior to the recession, if you were to go to ask any workforce, and he operates across Europe, not at all actually in the UK, or hardly in the UK, he's based in Holland, but operates across mainland Europe. If you were to go and ask any workforce what they want, their top three wish list of qualities of their business that they work in, they would have said work-life balance. Post-recession, ask the same people the same question, nobody mentions work-life balance. Because when the alternative to working hard is no work, people have a different mindset. But what people want now is performance management, fair, equitable performance management. Because they know that their employers cannot promise them continuity of employment. They know that because it's a tough world. But what they want to know is that you are measuring their performance fairly and equitably against their peers so that if, at a future date, you have to make tough calls, do we have to make more people redundant and so on, you will judge their contribution to the business fairly. I believe that we have to be fair, but tough. Tough love. Challenge with support in the way that we engage with our people. And one of the things that all the companies that we've talked about do is they don't price crumble. If you get the basics right, yes, of course, we live our lives under price pressure. The challenging world makes ridiculous demands upon our businesses in terms of price reductions, and we have to deal with those. We have to deal with them cautiously, we have to deal with them prudently, we have to keep the conversations going. But I'm convinced that we don't have to be price crumblers if we have got the basics right in terms of how we operate our business. Fourthly, in a shrinking world, think big. One of the things that came out of all of us, both of those videos, and many of the experiences that I know, is that the people involved see their business within the context of a global marketplace. Globalisation is the most significant phenomena to apply to the 21st century business world. And every company, including SMEs, including the smallest SMEs, has to be thinking about globalisation. It has to be thinking about what globalisation means for its business, what it can do differently, what it can do abroad, can it outsource some of its production capacity, and most significantly, certainly for manufacturing businesses, it has to consider whether it can export. And one of the key drivers of growth in Port Merion, in Wax Lyrical, in LMK, the three examples that I've given you, lots of other businesses that we are close to in our lives is export, because it opens up new markets with huge sales potential, and it extends the life of our products, and that is obviously very, very good for profit. It also exposes a business to a wider economic platform than just the country that we operate within. It's a privilege, really, to trade internationally. Mazar is an international business, and I travel abroad, well, pretty well all of the time. And as you travel around the world and see the way in which different economies are dealing post-recession, you realise that there is, as I say on the slide, a two-tier economy. But particularly in the Far East, there is real vibrant growth. I was in Asia a few months ago, and whoever you meet in Asia has such a can-do attitude, such an enthusiasm. This is the decade of Asia. Everybody starts a conversation like that. And if you look at the extrapolation of the GDP, say, in China, in 20 years' time, it is absolutely off the scale. If you don't, in your business and the businesses you advise, explore the possibility of exporting to these marketplaces, you are severely restricting the ability of what you can do. Even in Europe, there are dramatically different responses in individual country economies. I was in Sweden about a month ago, and I said to some of the people I was with in Sweden, so how is it like in the recession here? Doesn't affect us, they said. Staggering. I was in Dublin last week. How's the recession here? It's absolutely dire. And so by restricting ourselves to the single country that we operate within, we are greatly, greatly restricting the potential of our businesses to grow. You do have to be aware of one point, though. I want to tell you a story. You have to understand the culture of the country that you operate within. There is a marketing company that was trying to export children's stories to Japan. And they did, what was it, the train one, Thomas the Tank Engine. Flew off the shelves. They thought, this is great. What else can we do? Let's try Postman Pat. Completely bombed. The reason it completely bombed, well, you can just see it on that picture. Do you know what it is? He's got three fingers. I told my wife this the other day when I was putting these slides together, and because we have three small grandchildren, and we read them Postman Pat stories. So she goes rushing around the house to get the Postman Pat books. And I have to tell you, everybody in Greendale, has, even Mrs. Goggins, has three fingers. No worries, you would think, in a Western economy. In Japan, the only people who have three fingers are members of the triad. You wouldn't want your little children mixing with people with three fingers. So, a cautionary tale. And the fifth point of the five-point plan is this. In a lonely world, make friends. Believe me, it's tough running a business. It's a lonely place. You need a partner. You need a friend. You need advice. Some of you are in private practice, and you will provide that, or I hope you will provide that service to your clients, because your clients, particularly if they're SMEs, need a friend and they need advice. Some of you are running businesses, and I don't know whether you have your own support mechanisms, but you need to find people who will bring quality, balanced advice, preferably using a skill set different to the one that you have. Not that there's anything wrong with having the skill set of an accountant, it's just that accountants tend to think in a particular way. And we in Mazar, for many of our clients, offer that sort of service. And just to tell you in 1 minute a little bit more about Mazar, just in 1 minute, the orange on that world map shows the countries that we operate in as a single partnership, and the different other colours explain, I won't go through all the detail, how we can, through different relationships that we have, do business in virtually every part of the world. We touch countries that together make up 98 or 9, I can't remember which percent, of the world's gross domestic product. And we have, in a single partnership, 13,000 people. You can see on the slide how our number of people has grown, how our turnover has grown over the last few years. We have more than 13,000 people operating in 69 countries right now. There's lots of things I could tell you about Mazar. I'm just going to tell you two. We're an integrated, independent, international business. Integrated means we are one partnership operating across the globe. So we have international strategy. We have international profit sharing, we have international quality control, and we can ensure that our clients who trade internationally receive a seamless service across international boundaries wherever they might be. And secondly, one of the phrases that I use is a personal touch, backed by big experience. We have the big experience. All the stuff that the very largest firms of accountants can do. Of course we can. But we try to do it differently. We try to put ourselves in our client's shoes. We try to see their problems through their eyes. We try to make the Mazar experience for our clients a slightly different one. So, a five-point plan. What, in my view, SMEs, the companies that we run, the companies that we advise, can do differently to raise their visibility and, with the footprint that they have, to start to move the UK forward and out of recession. I've finished dead on the time I was given. Thank you very much for listening.
Thanks for that applause, and thank you very much, David. That was a really stimulating presentation. I've really enjoyed that. I mean, all of us here, we all work, I suspect, with SMEs. This is an area we can make a huge difference, and to make the SME market even better. I think we have the expertise within the room to really help to do that. That was really, really good. Thank you. Right, just a couple of points then. I think there was a bit of a shortage of handouts, I've been told, on some of the tables. If you haven't got one, there are some at the back, I'm told, as well. Okay. Now, before I tell you what we're doing next, can I just say a few thank yous while I've got everyone in the same room. this is probably our the biggest event that the AAT organises every year, I suspect, and it's amazing the amount of work and effort that goes into organising some of these things. They all seem to work seamlessly, and it all seems to just happen. This doesn't happen by accident. There's a huge team of people that are involved to make these things happen. Now, at the back of the room today, I'm just going to embarrass a few people now, I think. There are a number of AAT staff at the back of the room. Can I just ask all the AAT staff in the room to stand up and show themselves to us all here? That's all of you, including you, Neil and Adam. Are there any more AAT staff at the back that are hiding? Can you just join with me and give them all a huge round of applause for what they've done here today? I know that once they get back to the office on Monday morning, there'll probably be a debrief, and then they'll be planning next year's weekend straight away. This takes a huge amount of planning. Thank you very much for all that you do. Thank you. Okay, there's a refreshment break now in the King's Lounge. There's a slide up there now showing you where the next sessions are. If you can all be prompt in your appropriate room, otherwise Alison will get very annoyed with you. If you can all be prompt in your appropriate room at 11:15, please. Thank you very much. Thank you.